Hey everybody, welcome back to our podcast, The Brothers Geek.
The Brothers
still
Geek.
Still emphasis on The Brothers Geek. And we welcome you to episode 3.
Episode trace for all of our listeners in España, or Mexico.
We don't have listeners here.
Well, who knows?
Our huge amounts of crowds that'll come to our podcast later, going back to our first episodes.
Yeah, exactly. Those guys. Yeah. Or girls.
All right.
I don't want to be sexist.
All right, well.
Well, I'm Patrick, still.
I'm still Chris. Yeah. We've been trying on switching brains, and it's just not working.
Doesn't work, so I guess we'll just be ourselves.
I guess.
But,
Boring.
Boring old selves.
But,
Yeah, episode 3. As you can see from the title, right now, Chris's phone is blowing up. That's not the title. The title is A Wild Theory Appears. So, that's what we're going to be talking about. But first, what are we drinking tonight, Chris?
We're drinking the best of the best tonight. Maybe not the best of the best, but it's very, very close. And it's my personal favorite beer. It is from Alesmith. It's called Speedway Stout. And it is a stout that has it's got a lot of coffee flavor in there. If you're a coffee lover, definitely the beer for you. It's just you drink it and it's so smooth, but it's got that coffee flavor, the little bit of bitterness, somehow creamy as it goes down, and it's just delicious.
If you're just a lover of life,
yeah,
you'll like this.
It's also 12%, so giddy up.
Well, it's a tick down from last week's beer.
True.
Which was 13. We all know how that went.
Not bad.
Not bad. It went quite well.
Yeah.
So that's what we're drinking this week.
Yep.
What have you been watching, playing, reading,
well,
writing this week?
Been writing. Can't talk about that yet. But
no shameless plugs yet.
Not yet, but soon.
Soon.
But for games, I picked up the Witcher 3 Ultimate Edition, Collector Edition, Game of the Year Edition, whatever the heck it's called,
right,
for PS4.
You were talking about that last week.
Yeah, I did it, like, later that day, I think. But yeah, I got that, and I was glad to start over, because I had no idea where I was. I know I was stuck somewhere. I'll remember when I see it again.
Yeah.
Oh, I keep dying. This is where I was.
I keep dying to this drunk guy. Siri.
But it is excellent. I've had a lot of fun playing through that again. And having a controller is so much better than the keyboard.
It is better.
I can actually dodge and get out of the way of things
now.
You
can use your full set of moves.
Maybe it was so hard because I couldn't dodge out of the way. I was just swinging a sword, hoping to God I hit something.
Yeah.
Throwing fire at him.
Yeah,
you know?
Couldn't parry very, or, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, all that stuff. Yeah, with a controller, definitely easier.
Yeah, for sure.
With the mechanics of it all.
Yeah.
Sometimes games are better with the mouse and keyboard. Sometimes they're better with the controller. Just kind of find that. First-person shooters, better with a mouse and keyboard, because you can aim better. But games like that, when there's a lot going on, you got moves you can throw out, powers that you can easily switch to, or not easily switch to, depending on what you're using.
That's true.
But rolling around and dodging and that kind of stuff, mouse or controller.
I don't see how mouse and keyboard is ever better. Ever.
Sometimes it's better.
No, it's not.
With Skyrim, it's better. Well, especially with our gaming mouse that we have.
I don't use the gaming mouse.
You don't, well, because you set up the hotkeys with the 1, 2, 3, 4, so you can just easily do it with your thumb.
Yeah, but I always, you know,
loser.
I forget where my thumb is.
PC Master Race. That's all I gotta say.
Oh, man.
So
That's the big thing for me. What about you? What do you got going on?
Still Smite. Getting better at it. I've set it upon myself, so the way it works is when you play as a god or goddess or Gorgon, if you're playing as Medusa, if you want to get technical about it.
A Demogorgon?
No.
Oh.
A Gronkogorgon. Demogorgon. Whatever. You, like, get experience with that god. It's called, like, Worshippers. And so you get to a certain amount and you, like, reach mastery. And there's, like, 10 levels of mastery. So I've set it upon myself to try to get mastery with at least one, like, one of each type of god. And so right now I have 2 with guardians, 2 with mages, 2 with hunters, 1 with warrior. And I'm working on an assassin, but I'm quickly realizing that I'm just awful at it. Because I'll just go in to try to, like, kill somebody real quick, and then I'll just die. Because I'm not good at being patient. I just want to get in there and just kill. You know, because I'm nemesis, you know. I want to get in there and kill. I want to bring judgment to these heathens, you know. But it doesn't work like that. So, but I've sort of branched out a little bit as well. I've started to play not just the arena game mode. Now I'm playing Joust. And so that's been fun to try to learn. But yeah, I'm getting better at it. I'm in a clan now, a part of this, like, YouTuber's clan called, like, his name is Shivoki, and
Shivoki.
He's really cool. I really like his videos. I've been watching a lot. They've helped me a lot to learn, like, gods and stuff and how to play them. But yeah, that's what I've been playing. Literally, from this week to last week, or last week to this week, what I've been playing and what I've been watching has not changed. Still watching Friday Night Lights, Mon season, whatever, season 4 now, I think. And, like, things are happening, of course, and it's really good. Mm. Spoiler alert for those who haven't... Also, spoiler alert just for this whole episode once we get to the topic. I'll put it in
the Actually script. Put the spoiler tag on it this time. Alright,
I didn't want it last week because it's about things that are, like, way old.
Still. When I was reading the Mass Effect articles for the new one, they were putting spoiler alerts for the whole rest of... Now, why would you read about the new one if you didn't play all the rest of them? Or at least some of them.
I don't know.
So, still spoilers on that.
Alright.
Yeah.
Alright.
Jeez.
Spoiler alert, Tim Riggins is in prison right now. And where I'm at in the show. So, yeah. Have you been watching anything besides...
Besides more Mr. Science Theater?
Yeah.
In the background? I don't think so.
No.
No. Yeah. No. I gotta get on that Mr. Robot.
Yeah, I've been watching that as well.
Wait, was it yesterday?
What?
Westworld.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Was it yesterday? I know it's soon. It's
well, you're talking to your girlfriend about it.
Yeah. So, maybe it was yesterday. I gotta get on that. That's what I should have watched before we started this thing.
Next week we can talk
about
it.
Next week we'll talk about it. But, yeah, we're gonna...
So I should watch that, too.
Yeah.
That's what I hear.
Westworld, Michael Crichton was involved. Well, his ideas were involved. Anthony Hopkins is in the first episode. It's about... A Western amusement park.
It's basically wrong. Jurassic Park with robots.
Yeah. Western robots.
Bang, bang.
So, can't go wrong there.
Well, obviously it did.
Oh! Shit.
Oh. Man. Mr. Robot's getting good, though. There's been a couple, like, episodes where I've been like, nothing has happened, really. But... Last week's episode, and, well, I guess technically 2 weeks ago, and this week's episode that just came out, the most recent one, real good. So,
that's good.
Yeah, you need to get on that.
I know.
Because I want to talk to you about it, because
okay.
It's crazy. Okay. But, because I have some theories, which is what we're going to be talking about this week. Our sort of favorite theories in the... geek nerd world. Yeah. So
both old and new.
Both old and newer stuff. We've been heavy-handed a little bit on the video game side of things these past 2 episodes.
It's true.
But we're still going to be heavy.
we're splitting it up.
We're throwing in TV and movies as well this week.
Maybe we should do TV and movies first So
it's not just like, yeah. Video games again.
You gotta get through the video game.
Oh my god. I'm a green god. So yeah, so we're going to be talking some of our favorite theories. Get on your tinfoil hats and strap in, because we're going to be talking about some wild ones today. One specifically I have in mind for Game of Thrones. So, let's just start with TV then, shall we? Okay. So yeah, I was just sort of looking up, like, today, in preparation for this episode, because I wanted to talk about kind of two for Game of Thrones. One is the sort of ridiculous Varys... Oh, this is where the spoilers start to come into play. So if you are way behind on, like, Game of Thrones or whatever other topics, we're going to be talking about Game of Thrones, Stranger Things, Mass Effect, Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask, I guess, if you don't want to be spoiled on a game that came out in 96 or something. And Lord of the Rings and Inception are sort of that sort of. But so if you don't want to get spoiled on any of those, if you don't care, continue listening. If you genuinely, so right now we're talking about Game of Thrones. Yeah. Skip ahead. I'll try to put time in the description of, like, we're talking about this topic at this period of time, so that you can sort of, if you want to skip a certain topic, want to listen to the rest of the episode.
True.
I'll put in some extra work.
If you've done a lot of research, I mean, a lot of these theories aren't groundbreaking or new.
None of them are ones that we have come up with ourselves.
Okay. But
to be fair.
But there are favorites.
Yeah, there are favorites.
Whatever the hell we want to talk about, so.
Yeah, there are favorites. And none of these are confirmed, really. There was one sort of, like, big popular Game of Thrones one that Jon Snow is Targaryen. That's sort of been confirmed now.
Yeah.
In the show.
Definitely.
Yeah, it hasn't kind of sort of been confirmed. It has definitely been confirmed.
Yeah, I mean, no, they haven't come out and said, like,
Jon is a Targaryen!
Exactly, but, pretty much.
If you watched last season, then you know. One that I kind of have, or I kind of did come up with my own, is, like, the whole, in the books of Game of Thrones, there's this whole, like, prophecy sort of thing, and it's kind of in the show, too, but it's not as big in the show. Like, the three-headed dragon sort of deal, because the Targaryen symbol is the three-headed dragon, then there's this prophecy that the three-headed dragon was going to come back, and blah de blah, blah. So people are like, does that mean Daenerys is three dragons, or is Daenerys one head of the dragon? Who are the other two heads? And my theory is that Daenerys is one, Jon is another one, and Bran is another one.
Bran? Oh.
Yeah, because he can warg into a dragon.
Yeah.
If he wanted to.
And, why wouldn't you want?
And, like, the three-eyed raven in the book says, like, you'll never walk again, but you'll fly. And so, like, that might have been a reference to, like, you'll become the three-eyed raven. But I think it's a reference to, like, you'll warg into a dragon.
You're gonna be a dragon, though!
And there is that shot in one of his flash-forward visions of, like, a dragon shadow passing over, like, King's Landing.
True.
So, like, that could be, like, him seeing that through someone else's eyes, or it could be him as a dragon.
But he sees a lot of scenes that he's not actually there for.
It's true.
So.
It could have been something else.
Yeah.
But, anyway. So, a funny theory of Game of Thrones is Varys is a it's called Merlings in the Game of Thrones sort of universe. It's, like, an actual thing. There are Merlings in the universe. There's, like, a house in the north that has, like, a Merling as their house symbol, and there's references that sailors, like, see them all the time, and yada yada yada, and it, like, sort of comes from, it's funny how, like, this Redditor has, like, come up with it, and it's really clever. I don't think it's true at all, but it's one of my favorites just because it's, like, ridiculous. So, like, Varys, the sort of spy master that seems to get, like, from place to place very quickly, and from the show he's, like, crossing over seas, like, very fast, and the logical thing is, like, he gets from, like, Westeros to Essos to, like, all these places, but, like, if you look at the geography, like, they just go in a line, so he just kind of, like, went along. And, of course, like, the show isn't, like, these things are happening, like, one right after another. There could be, like, periods of time. But, so it's like, oh, he gets across the ocean super quickly because he's a Merling and can just, like, swim. And, like, one of, in the first season, Arya catches him and this other guy, like, coming, like, in this, like, underground, like, place, like, and they're talking, and, like, there's dripping sounds, and that's what, like, ticks her off that someone is coming, is because there's, like, a dripping sound, and they're, like, from George R.R. Martin's mouth, or he's, like, coming from, like, a well. And so, like, people are just like, oh, he's a Merling, he's a eunuch, and, like, so... People...
Are all Merlings, like, something?
Well, he says he's a eunuch, so he's using that as, like, a cover-up, because, like, under there, he'd be, like, scaly, I guess. And so, like... There's, like, a scene when, like, a prostitute, like, touches, like, where his junk would be, and, like, she's all, like, surprised and stuff, even though it's, like, fairly good knowledge that, like, he's a eunuch, you know? But she's, like, super surprised, and he's kind of like, And then, like, Tyrion, when, like, when he's the Hand and they're, like, working together, Tyrion goes, like, oh, I'll toss you into the sea, and Varys is like, oh, you might be surprised at the results. Like, oh, why would I be surprised? Because you can just swim away, you know? Like, this is, like, kind of, like, really stupid. But the best part of the theory is, like, what is his motivation for, like, setting all of these things up? Like, getting Daenerys to marry, like, Khal Drogo, and giving her the eggs, and, like, all of this stuff, and, like, going back, and... getting Tyrion to, like, work with her. Like, what is his, like, what is his motivation? And, like, the best, like, it's the best part of the theory, is that he's giving the dragons to Daenerys and trying to help her, like, take over to, like, defeat the White Walkers in the north, which is just ice, right? So the dragon's fire will melt all of this ice.
Oh my god.
And create, basically, like, global warming. So that the water levels rise, and so, like, all of Westeros is, like, covered in water, basically. Except one place isn't covered in water, which is the Vale, which is ruled by Littlefinger, which Littlefinger says, like, oh, I have a handle on, like, Varys, like, don't even worry about it, like, I know what he's up to. So, like, he has placed himself in the Vale so that he can, like, still be ruler over all of these, like, Merlings. It's so stupid, but it's, like, so funny. Like, it's so funny that someone, like, tied these, like, pieces together to, like, make something that, like, it could happen, I guess. Like, the pieces are there, but, like...
But Varys walks around on his feet.
Yeah, it's... like, I don't know.
Is there a tail under there? Like,
I don't know. This is funny. Maybe
that's his penis. Is his tail.
Ooh!
Just rutting around.
Oh. Like, so it's all slippery.
Oh,
all
come on.
So that's probably up there for, like, one of my favorites. But
what's a real theory? Like,
an actual
theory?
Where
do you think this is actually going?
Is that Bran is the Lord of Light. So, if you don't know Game of Thrones and you're just listening to this part and kind of just interested in our talk, whatever, it's better if you know the show, but obviously. But the Lord of Light, there's many gods, like, in this universe, and the Lord of Light is one of these many gods that people follow. And apparently, it's, like, him versus what's called the Other. So it's basically just, like, good versus evil. And Melisandre is this character... And she's a Red Priest, which are the sort of main heads of the religion. And it's the Lord of Light versus the Other, which is represented sort of by the Night King. The Night... Yeah. That's his name, right? The Night King. The White Walker King.
Yeah.
And so she is sort of like... Her mission is to obliterate this evil part of it and fight the White Walkers, because she follows after this Lord of Light and she will do anything to sort of get to this point. And it was discovered that as Bran was sort of going through his training and his, like, green seeing sort of visions in the last season, that he actually has influence over time, basically, and the events that pass through it. So it's not a stable version of time. It can be altered. And we find this out when it's the whole hashtag hold the door episode of he goes back in the past, and he it's at this point when this crazy action is happening in the real world, but he's having this vision, and Hodor, which is like has been his helper this whole time, a beloved character, is holding the door back from all of these walkers and whites who are chasing after them. And this other character, Mira's telling him to hold the door, and while this is all happening, Bran is seen in the past, like, Hodor as a young boy, and he, like, Bran basically goes into him to help hold the door in the other world, but he does it, it's very complicated, you don't have to watch the episode, but anyway, it turns out that he has influence over the past, and yeah. Over time, is what you find out, because yeah. Then Hodor in the vision passes out and constantly is saying hold the door in what should be the past, and then eventually just turns into Hodor, and then it was a big reveal and we got our minds fucked and we had to pause the episode because it was crazy, and I called it a good 5 seconds before it happened. I just want to put that on paper. I called it. So there's like a vision, and so Bran has these visions and you get little tidbits of like the Mad King and how he's telling them to burn it all. And so many people have taken that as Bran is trying to tell the Mad King to burn them all, as in the White Walkers, because he has the green flame or whatever. And which would be very helpful against White Walkers.
Yeah.
And so it's this whole thing of, like, he is going into the past to try to influence the future as far as stopping the White Walkers. And so he becomes like Bran the Builder, which is this sort of folklore character who built the wall, which is like this huge ice wall that separates the wildlings and the White Walkers from everything else in Westeros. And he's also sort of speaking to these red priests to tell them, like, find the promised prince, which is the person that will sort of take the fight to the White Walkers, which is now sort of Jon Snow. Yeah, and it's like this theory that it's not really the Lord of Light, but it's Bran speaking through the flames, telling them what to do. But because they're human beings and he's getting all of these like future events and past events perfectly, but they're sort of interpreting it wrong, so that's why, like, Stannis didn't really work out, because they interpreted that wrong, and stuff like that. The only problem is the whole, like, green flame thing isn't really going to work, since Cersei sort of used it all to, like, blow up the freaking, like, everyone, basically. So that's kind of out the window. But we'll see. So that is, like, a theory that very well could be true. That was very complicated. But
I like it.
It's a good theory.
I've heard, the Lord of Light part of it.
Yeah.
Because I heard, like, Bran the Builder part, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But not that he was actually the one speaking to all the Red Priests. That's cool.
Yeah. And it's sort of like, you know, if that is, like, sort of amateur, as he's able to whisper and influence, and he hasn't really had much training, the more he, like, practices it, how he could, like, start communicating better, even be, like, a physical, maybe, form in the past, if he is, like, Bran the Builder. And if you look at the, Stark family tree, there's, like, a ton of Brans, and there's, like, a ton of other, like, they have common names. So, like, he might even be the one that has set up this sort of, like, unspoken Stark house rule, which is like make sure there's always a Stark in Winterfell so that he ensures that he's born and stuff like that. And there's a bunch of brands that he could have been in like different times to sort of influence events. And
jeez,
yeah,
it's complicated,
but like it could
I need very, a flow chart
it could very well work. I watched a video on it. It was a very good video. So yeah, that's sort of my...
That's your...
TV
one?
Theory.
That's good.
Game of Thrones
in a nutshell.
Yeah. And if you haven't watched Game of Thrones, what are you doing?
Well, I'm here to talk about Stranger Things. So,
which, if you haven't watched Stranger Things, what are you doing, guys? Am I right?
I haven't seen it.
I've seen some of it.
You've seen some of it, but you need to watch it, like, as a show.
Yeah.
Because it's the best thing ever.
Stop.
I was gonna try to make a pun, but...
So, obviously, spoiler alerts for Stranger Things. It's a pretty new show, so...
This is an actual, like... That and the Game of Thrones were, like, spoiler alerts.
Actual spoilers, right?
Yeah.
So, first of all, we know, thank God, they have officially announced that there's going to be a Stranger Things Season 2. They had that awesome little video.
With what is maybe the episode titles?
That's my guess, is because all it says is, you know, it does the intro music, which is by far the best intro I've ever seen. That and Season 1 of True Detective, maybe.
Yeah.
But, so it shows all these random titles, and I'm guessing that there are episode titles. It's like the Pumpkin Patch, which sounds terrifying, and, you know, different things.
Yeah, there was, like, a couple crazy ones. Yeah, I was like, what?
This is scary. Like, The Lost Boy or something.
Yeah.
The Boy and His Horrors. I don't know.
Different thing.
So, we know it's going to happen. Thank God, because I need it, like, now. I need that in Game of Thrones right now. I'm going to have to watch through Stranger Things again. But there are some theories about what the heck's going on. First of all, some questions, I guess, I should bring up.
Yeah.
We all know the Upside Down is like a mirror image or like a dark world, you know, Zelda-esque dark world of the real world. But so far, we've only seen one of the, like, terrifying creatures. Like, there's only been one that's been running around. And we don't know, is there more? What's going on?
Which, if there's more of those things, God help us.
Just give up.
Yeah.
I'm going to call it the Demogorgon, because that's kind of what they use from Dungeons & Dragons to, like, describe the monster. And I will call it Demogronkins at some point, which is my fantasy football team name.
Right.
But I will call it, as a warning, that a few times. So the Demogorgon is maybe alone, maybe by itself, I don't know. It seems to eat animals. We see it at some point eating a deer. So it seems to eat animals, but it doesn't seem to eat humans, interestingly enough.
Right.
Because all we see that it does with humans is it captures them and it, like, hooks them up, like, alien style to little pods, and it's
like,
disgusting.
Harvesting them, sort
of. Yeah,
like,
almost like, are they, like eggs to grow other ones,
like,
you know?
Incubators.
Like,
ugh.
Yeah.
Gross.
it's gross. Very alien-esque. So it seems like it's doing something with them, purposeful. And, you know, they get, oh god, what's the kid's name that's in there?
Elliot?
There's too many kids. Not Elliot. Will. Will's the kid to try to decide. They get him out of there. And then, at the end of the episode, or at the end of the season, he's, like, looking in a mirror, he's back in normal life, everything looks fine, and it, like, turns to the
upside down
world real quick, and he, like, coughs up this little larva slug of it.
Ugh.
It's just skinny, like, he spits it down the drain or whatever. So I was like, maybe it was, like, growing stuff inside of him, and that's, like, another one or something. But yeah. Does that mean it's in the real world now? Like, oh, what's going on with that thing? But the big one is, you know, where did this monster come from? And in the throughout the season, we see that Eleven, whose psychic powers are awesome, and she's the best character ever.
Badass chick.
Yeah.
Badass 11-year-old.
She, like, creates basically the portal for it to come through, because there's, like, a big science experiment. Government's trying to force her into, like, finding these creatures on the other side. They know, like, the Upside Down exists, what it seems like. And they're trying to kind of, like, explore the reaches of the human mind kind of thing. So what the show explains is that she goes into her mind and sees this creature, and it terrifies her so much she basically like screams while she's in this like psychic trance, and it cracks the wall and basically just creates like a portal between the Upside Down and our world, and it can come back and forth all it wants to now because of it. And she thinks she's a monster because she created it, and that's kind of like her secret for a little while. And so she created the portal. We know that for sure. The thing is, there is a theory out there that is she actually creates and is kind of the monster also.
Hmm.
So the way the theory works is it's kind of like a representation of all of her, like fears and the childhood trauma she goes through from going through all these experiments. And it is like her in some sense. It's like her psychic, like, projection of all this disgusting, like, crap that's been done to her in this experiment. And what's couple of the big things for it is the first time we ever see the creature, like, chronologically, if you lay out the timeline of what's happening, is in her mind. So she goes and she sees it, and it's not in the Upside Down. It's in this, like, big black kind of vast chamber. There's water, you know, everywhere, and the water could also represent, like, you know, it's just a reflection of herself.
Ooh,
right. So symbolism. She sees it, and she at first is scared. So it takes some like a few tries for them to get her to go over to it, and she touches it inside her mind, and that's when she creates the portal because she's terrified. But it's in her mind. It's not in the Upside Down. The Upside Down doesn't exist until this all happens. So the big theory is she has actually, like, created the monster and created the whole entire, like, scenario. Because in her mind, her psychic powers are so powerful, she, like, creates life kind of thing. There's a couple other clues, too, and that's she uses her powers to basically do set up that experiment again so she can go and find Will, who's trapped out there, and that's how eventually they can try to communicate with him a little bit, besides, you know, lights.
Right.
And
Christmas lights.
Yeah. So she finds him, but as soon as she does, like, the thing finds him too. So it's like there's might be some kind of link between her and the thing, and she's the only one that's able to, like, really damage it at all. Like, he gets injured from other people, but she, like, totally obliterates it and herself at the same time. So, luckily we figure she's still alive, because that's, I guess, still part of the theory, because at the end of the episode, you know, I guess it's implied she's dead with it, but the police chief, also the best character ever created, he, like, keeps dropping off Eggos at this, like, drop spot for her. So she's obviously somehow alive.
Which was her favorite food.
Yeah, exactly. I'm assuming you know.
Not just a nice treat that we all love. Breakfast is the most important meal of the day, but Legos. Eggos.
Maybe Legos too, I don't know. It's just boring. Hey,
Legos are cool.
I know.
Eggos were her favorite.
I'm assuming you've seen
the
show, I guess.
I'm just saying that for people who might not give a shit.
Yeah. So she keeps getting Eggos, and so obviously she's alive somewhere, which also means maybe the creature is too? I don't know. Another big thing that I don't really have a theory for, but I haven't really seen anyone talking about it, maybe I haven't done enough research on it, but after they rescue Will, they're at the hospital, and the police chief comes out, and a black car pulls up next to him, and it kind of looks like government people. Although most of the government people have been, like, lit by the end of the season. But he, like, gets into their car, and you're like, what? Is he working with them now? Because he hated them, you know?
Yeah.
Were they working together the whole time? Because it didn't seem like it. Because we had moments where he's on his own, and he's, like, paranoid that they're bugged his house, and he's, like, ripping up his phone and stuff. So it seems like they weren't working together, but they don't even really talk to him. They just say, you know, get in, and he hops in. Like, it's nothing. And it's like, what is going on there? But Then it shows, like, 1 month later, and he's back at the police, you know, department doing his job, and that's when he gives the Eggos, you know, to the drop spot. So he's still working with Eleven and maybe the government, and I don't know what's going on with him, but I haven't really seen a lot of people talk about that aspect, which is interesting, because that was, like, the first thing I was like, what the hell? So, yeah, we'll have to see what happens. I just, I need it. I need it right now.
I need it. Gotta chase the dragon.
So.
Yeah, that's like, yeah, I need to watch the show in its entirety.
It's really good, dude. It's really good.
Man, that is good.
Yeah, my favorite is Police Chief, whatever his name is.
Police Chief,
whatever. Like, look, I got cheat sheet. I got cheat sheet right here.
You have a cheat sheet? You have, like, a picture on your phone with all, like, the characters' names?
I've brought up IMDb, alright? Okay. Chief Hopper.
Hopper. Huh.
Hopper. Symbolic for how he hops around to different sides!
Nice.
But, man.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Wow. I need to watch this.
Yes.
All right.
Plus, there's just awesome scenes, and it's super nerdy. I don't know why you haven't watched it
yet. It's all been about Friday Night Lights, man.
No. Forget about Friday Night Lights.
No, I can't. I need to know. I need to know if freaking Matt and what's-her-face are going to stay together or whatever. Julie.
Spoiler alert. My theory for it, they all graduate.
Some of them already have, is the thing. Yeah, I don't know. But now the school is split in two. It's East Dillon and whatever. We won't talk about it.
No, we won't.
Hit me up on Twitter if you want to talk about Friday Night Lights. So yeah, let's move on to movies. So we'll save video games for last so that...
Video games is the longest one, too.
Video games is
the longest one. At least mine
has. Yeah. Mine's pretty good, too. But let's talk about movies. Mine's real quick, because it's a theory that I don't really enjoy.
We literally said these are our favorite theories.
I don't enjoy it because it's not true, but people think it's true.
It's definitely not true.
It's definitely not true, but...
Because the books, you gotta read the books.
God. Is the whole Lord of the Rings... Gandalf's plan the whole time was to fly on eagles. So, it's funny because it stems from if you know this, like, video series on YouTube called How It Should Have Ended, where they take, like, movies and TV shows and stuff and say, like, this is how it should have ended. And it's, like, a funny sort of, like, stupid thing. But they did one for Lord of the Rings, where they're all meeting at Rivendell. And they go, like, how are we going to get the ring to Mordor? Like, we're just going to walk it there? But then it, like, cuts to, like, them just, like, flying on eagles. And the eagles are, like, blindfolded. And they're like, where the hell are we going? And, like, they just fly over Mount Doom and just, like, drop the ring. And then it just, like... And then in the middle of the ring dropping, like, Gollum comes flying in, like, chasing after it. And, like, falls in the lava and... They're at the Black Gate, like, distracting, like, Sauron, and then it, you know, Sauron dies or whatever, and then they all walk away, and I think it's Aragorn or Legolas that goes, like, yeah, one of us would have, like, could have died, you know, referencing, like, Boromir, because, like, Boromir's alive and stuff, and it's, like, that's the, but people took that, I don't think this theory is older than that.
Because it's not older than the movies.
Yeah, because right.
The book's kind of, like, squash why it doesn't happen.
Yeah, so, like, the whole thing is, like, when Gandalf is in Moria, and he's, like, trapped by the Balrog, and he's about to fall into this bottomless pit sort of thing, he goes, fly, you fools, which is just a fancy term for, like, run away, you idiots.
Real quick.
Yeah, because this Balrog will fuck you up. But people have... taken that and say, like, oh no, he literally meant, like, fly, like, on eagles, and...
Because they had to be secretive about it so that no one from the enemy would find out.
Right.
So it's been a secret to him only.
Right.
So he's gotta, like, try to say it as quick as he can.
Yeah, because he's falling by his little fingernails, he's, like, on this, like, ledge.
Yeah.
he's got to say something quick, and, you know, they misinterpret it, and it doesn't happen, and it's stupid. But, yeah, like, in the books, it's very quickly...
It's in the Council of Elrond. They, like, talk about...
Because they kind of, like...
Different possibilities.
They kind of bring it up.
Yeah, they bring up, like...
Can we get the eagles to help?
Let's take it out into the sea and just dump it, you know? And it's like, well, it's not going to destroy, like, Sauron if we do it that way, And, like, at some point, we got to get rid of it. Like, we can't have it around anywhere.
Yeah. Like, the ring's will is so powerful that it will somehow return.
Yeah.
Maybe a Merlin will bring it and take over Westeros.
Yeah.
That's another theory.
And they talk about Tom Bombadil also.
Right.
Because apparently the ring doesn't have any power. It doesn't affect him at all. Tom Bombadil from the books only. Understandably, everyone gets pissed off, but it's like, it would have been...
If it was in the movie, it would have been so weird.
Off pace. Yeah. Not to say that I don't love that whole part, but it doesn't affect him at all. So they talk about, like, maybe Tom Bombadil can take it and, you know, use it maybe, but he's confined to the Old Forest because reasons, because Tolkien was like, that's how it is. So... Yeah.
Because maybe he's evil.
Yeah, that's
that's a theory, yeah. we could literally just have an episode on, like, Lord of the Rings theories.
Absolutely. So, yeah, that's... They talk about the eagles, too, and that they do what they want. You know, like, they're totally independent of what's going on. They don't care.
Yeah. And the only reason why they help Gandalf... Escape Saruman is because they have a debt to him because he saved the king.
The king, yeah. But there is one of my old junior high friends I don't talk to anymore, but he shows up on my Facebook all the time. He's like, I don't understand this, like, eagles theory. Wouldn't, like, orcs and everybody see the eagles flying in? And you still got miles to go before you get out to them. Like, there's Nazgul literally flying around.
Yeah.
The big one, he's like, the big plot for me is, why not have, like, two guards at the Crack of Doom? It's a pretty important place. I'm like, that's really true.
Well, Sauron in his sort of pride.
Just, you can explain it away.
Yeah.
Just two orcs.
Yeah.
Done.
His own hubris got the best of him.
I suppose. I don't care who is at the gate. You leave two guys at either side of that door.
Yeah. And the only reason, like, the eagles come to help at the end is kind of like the Ents. You know, they decided, like, well, if Sauron wins, we're kind of fucked, so I guess...
And then there's stuff going on in the north that isn't talked about in the movies that the eagles see, and then they decide, like, we have to join. Right. So, I get it. It's kind of a cop-out, but that part of the story isn't... Like, it's not important. The eagles don't save him. It's Frodo dropping the ring in that saves him. Spoiler alert.
Yeah. The good guys win.
Spoiler alert from, like, the 40s.
Yeah.
60s. Well, 40s was The Hobbit, I guess.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings theory.
There's all kinds of other ones that we can go into. But...
Another one is, like, I just thought of this right now. The Batman theory. Oh, what is it?
That Joker is his brother or something?
Yeah, it's, like, so stupid. Yeah. But I don't know much about that.
I've heard of that one too.
Yeah.
What was my idea? Oh, Inception.
Right.
Here's an old one. Is it falling at the end?
Is he dreaming?
That's the big question on it. And the fact of the matter is that's not his totem, that's his wife's totem. So it doesn't matter what that's doing.
Right.
His totem is actually his wedding ring, and inside dreams he's wearing it, and outside of dreams he's not. And I don't remember in the last scene if he's wearing it or not. I think he is.
He is.
Somebody, like,
it.
Catches it.
Yeah.
And so it's like, oh, he's dreaming. So at the end, he's actually dreaming. That's the theory, is that his wedding ring is actually his totem.
Right.
And that's what lets him know if he's in, like, a dream or not. Maybe he's just accepted the fact that this is as close as he can get to reality. So I just don't remember, trying to remember which one it was. Did he have his ring on or not?
I don't know.
So
we need to rewatch the movie.
We do.
But yeah, because like the whole totem thing is like, don't let anybody know what your totem is or touch your totem or anything like that.
Stranger danger.
Yeah. Which, I don't know how anybody else's totem works, because like her...
Ellen I would Page's, love to see the other totems in action.
Yeah, because like Ellen Page's totem is a chess piece.
And it's like, does it always like stand up when you push it over? That's what it seems like she's doing.
Yeah, like every she time knocks you push it over, right? When yeah, she makes
when
it,
when she knocks it over, like maybe in a dream it stands back up. But I don't know why she has to drill holes in real life to make it stand up in a dream. Like, how do you get something from real life to do anything in a dream?
Right.
Besides, this is just how you think it does.
I don't know.
And Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
This is dice, right?
This is like loaded dice, so it must roll to a certain
number every time.
Every time. But
yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I would watch the whole movie about everyone's totems.
Yeah, what's his face's totem?
Tom Hardy?
Yeah, he doesn't really have one, or it's not revealed.
He's motherfucking Tom Hardy. He doesn't need a totem.
In a dream, he's hard all the time. That's what his totem is. His totem is his dick.
Boom. Solved.
Solved. Mystery solved.
Alright.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's move on to the big one.
The video games.
Video games. So, I'll go first, since yours is going to... Which yours is mine as
I could teach a college course.
Right. So one of my favorite theories in video games, especially
video games,
is the Majora's Mask theory that Link is dead the whole game. So it sort of stems from another theory, which is each of the areas in Majora's Mask is. A stage of grief. So, like, the stages of grief are denial, anger, bargaining, depression,
acceptance.
Yeah. So, like, the main area, Clock Town, is denial. Because all of the people at Clock Town, there's this moon effing, like, falling on this town, and no one seems to, like, give a shit.
The town is called Terminia.
That's, like, that's the whole land. So, like, that...
It's terminal!
So that gets into the whole, like, death thing. But, like, just the stages of grief thing. So, like, Clock Town represents denial, because all the members of Clock Town are like, oh, if any, but, like... The builder guy straight up in the mayor's room says, like, oh, you're a coward if you think, like, the moon is falling down. Like, we're going to throw a festival, you know, and everyone's in denial that this thing is happening, you know. Mm. And then the next area, the swamp, is anger because the, like, king of the Deku people, you know, gets angry because his daughter, the princess, is missing and sort of just blames this monkey that, you know, didn't do it, but
whoa,
just...
Whoa.
But is just, like, angry. So, like, just capture this monkey, like, you did it! You know, you were in this area at the wrong place at the wrong time, even though he had nothing to do with it. He was just... The monkey was just wondering why the swamp was, like, you know, going to shit and was there and was, like, gonna kill this monkey, but he's just angry. And then bargaining is in the snow area. I forget the name of it. Where, like, the Goron dude is, you know, his ghost is floating around and he tells you, like, please use your magic power to bring me back. My son needs me. All this stuff. He's bargaining with you to, like, come back. And then depression is the next stage, which is the ocean... The Bay Area, because the chick lost her eggs, and she's just like super sad. She doesn't sing anymore, and she's part of this band.
It's a really sad part of the.
Yeah, it's a really sad part of the game. She's like
the
super
whole
sad.
Sad, really.
Yeah, it's a really dark game. So she's like just super depressed, doesn't talk, until finally you get to acceptance, which is Akana Valley, and it's just surrounded with dead people. I mean, re-deads are everywhere, and this, you know, but the temple of that is you go through this temple and you try to get to the top, so you're sort of building your way to heaven, quote-unquote, until you get to the item of that area, which is light arrows, sort of like the realization and like the sort of, oh, you are brought to the light, realizing that you are sort of like in grief, and you accept the fact that whatever happened has happened. The enlightenment sort of stage.
Right.
So the theory that Link is dead the whole time sort of is, it's actually Link also going through all of these stages.
Yeah, because he's dead and he needs to...
He needs to get to that acceptance.
Those people don't actually exist then?
Right, so if you look at the people, they're all the same, the exact same character models as the Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time characters, just completely different people.
Yeah.
Which is sort of like, why didn't Nintendo, like, were they just that lazy that they didn't make new character models? But, like, that can't be true. Like, they weren't, like, you know, there was years in between Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask. They would have had time to create other character models. So that, like, you know, and as you mentioned, the whole place is called Termina, which is a little on the nose, you know, terminal sort of thing. And at the beginning of the game, you are Link, and you're looking for something. You're looking for Navi, because at the end of Ocarina of Time, she floats away. Why anyone would look for that bitch afterwards, I don't know, but he's looking for her. And you get trapped by Skull Kid, and you fall down this giant tree, right? You fall down this huge-ass tree. And you're falling, and as you're falling, you get a weird LSD trip sort of thing. And, like, no one would be able to survive a fall like that. And the one thing that the Zelda games have taken very seriously is fall damage.
That's true.
They take it very seriously. You will die if you fall from too far. And the fall distance doesn't have to be super big. So, and you're Kid Link at this point. You're not Adult Link.
I think my biggest problem, and I totally love this theory, by the way, and I think it's real. I think my what it pisses me off, though, is Link dies from falling. Like, that's... He's defeated Ganon, got sent back through time. Like, he gets to enjoy his childhood, and what does he do? He fucking falls!
Yeah, it sucks. You're right. That does suck. But... And it works in the timeline, because Majora's Mask, in the official Zelda timeline, happens before Twilight Princess. And in Twilight Princess, we know that the fallen hero that you encounter that teaches you new moves and stuff is the Hero of Time. Like, that is canon.
Yeah.
So, he's dead.
But he's, like, an adult.
Right. Skeleton. So, where you die in Majora's Mask, if this theory is true, is the Lost Forest. The Lost Woods.
Okay.
Because Skull Kid is there.
Okay.
And in Ocarina of Time, you talk with a... what are the little people? The Kokiri?
Kokiri, yeah.
Yeah, Kokiri. One of them says, like, anybody who gets lost or dies in the Lost Woods becomes a skeleton dude, whatever they're called.
Oh, the, yeah. Skull Child.
Skull Child. Yeah, Skull Childs. So, he would become that. So that's what he's become, is a Skull Child. And because he's the hero of effing time, he's big and...
He's like, cool. Kick-ass Skull Child.
Yeah.
Ah.
But... He's dead.
It's definitely Child Link timeline that guy's from, because I remember him saying, like, no one knows, like, the acts I've done.
Yeah, because he is the... When, in Twilight Princess, when he's teaching you this, he says, like, oh, I was this hero, but I wasn't able to pass on my, you know, skills to anyone or anything like that. So, like, maybe because he died too young or whatever like that.
He lived a whole life, but got returned as a child.
But wasn't able to do any of it.
Yeah.
So, and another big thing is when you first meet the mask salesman in Majora's Mask, he welcomes you the first line you hear from him is, "You've met with a terrible fate, haven't you?" And that's the only time that that is said, that line is said, except one other time, which, if you play the game right, you'll never hear it again. Because the only other time it's said again is if you let all the days pass by and let the moon fall, and Link gets obliterated by the fire, because the moon is crashing, and then on sort of the game over screen, it says, "You've met with a terrible fate, haven't you?" So, many people think that when you first meet the mask salesman, he's talking about your terrible fate as you're trapped in the, like,
the Deku body.
Yeah. But if he says it again when you're dead, like, at the game over screen, and that's the only other time that is said.
Yeah.
And another big thing is, in the Akana Valley Temple, probably the creepiest part of the goddamn game, because you learn a song that leaves behind...
the worst.
Yeah, so there's sort of three masks that you have that transform you. So there's the Deku mask, which is, it's not explicitly said, but it's most likely the dead son of, like, the Deku guy in Clock Town, because it sort of references him, because you get it right at the beginning of the game, after you just see a dead Deku, like, the shriveled up, you know, one.
Yeah.
And then the Goron, which is Darmini or whatever, who's dead, because you see his ghost.
Yeah.
And then the Zora guy, who dies literally at your feet in the game, and you get his mask. And so you learn this song that when you're wearing one of those masks, leaves behind, like, an effigy, you know,
of those people,
because you need it to solve puzzles to, like, place on pedestals or whatever. But if you play it just as Link, it still leaves behind an effigy. So, like, if you're playing this song that leaves behind the effigy of dead people, but you can play one that leaves behind the effigy of a dead person, you know, like, it would make sense that you are dead. Which, I think this theory is true. I think Nintendo went there. But that game is very dark. Like, a dude, and just death is all, like, just all
everywhere
around that game.
So, loss, like, and death and tragedy.
Yeah.
Every mask you get, all the extra ones, I feel like every one of them has a terrible story involved.
Yeah. Like, you get a mask that just cries. You put it on and it's just you crying. You know?
Yeah.
And, like, it's just, like, death, yeah, death surrounds it. I don't know who was producing or writing that game that, like, was going through some tragedy in his life or her life.
They did it excellently.
They did an excellent job that, like, Link is also going through this, you know, sort of thing. And you play that as a kid, you know, or whatever, even as an adult, you know, that's just the human experience, is you lose people, you lose things that are important to you, and you play that game and you connect with it on a big level. But even Ocarina of Time has sort of, like, very serious undertones, you know? So
there's,
like,
some dark stuff in Ocarina of Time.
So, yeah, it's that game. I like that game. Besides Wind Waker, it's probably my second favorite Zelda game. And Wind Waker is only really my favorite because it was, like, the first one that I beat by myself. And it's a very bright and really pretty game, and it's fun, you know. And sail on this boat, it's really cool. So, yeah, I mean, death is all around. Like, I mean, Termina Field, like... It's pretty dead on, you know? And even, like, the theme of just, like, even the, you know, Skull Kid is just, like, his story, like, nobody likes him, you know?
Yeah.
And he's just, like, abandoned by everybody, and, you know, so people can connect with his story.
I think they set that up in Ocarina, too, because he's, like, lonely in Ocarina also, as I recall.
Yeah, so it's just, like, man, this is, like, crazy. Like, a dude commits suicide in that game. Like, you defeat this Garo guy in Akana Valley, and instead of, like, you just, like, finishing him off, he, like, pulls out this bomb, and he's like, "I'll do this myself," which is the Garo's way, and just, like, holds a bomb and just blows it up in his hand, and just, like, dude, this freaking suicide, dude. It's freaking crazy. So that's, like, one of my favorite video game theories, and one of my favorite video games. Yeah, it's a really good theory. Many people accept it as fact.
Yeah.
Which
is my girlfriend good... accepts it as, like, that's what happened.
I think 100%. So, too. I think so, too. And I like how Nintendo hasn't addressed it, just sort of leaving it to the fans.
That's another thing, too, because they were, they had Ocarina, then they did that game.
None of this freaking J.K. Rowling bullshit. Just fan service. So it's like, yep, true. Because there's many Harry Potter theories out there. I was like, yeah, Hermione's black. What? Because J.K. Rowling never explicitly states, Hermione's skin color, and people are just like, oh, yeah, she's black, and J.K. Rowling's like, oh, yeah, I like that. And it's like, stop. Like, you're just fan service.
Yeah.
You know, but whatever.
But that's another thing, too, because they did Ocarina, they did Majora, they could have just kept going, but they stopped and went a whole different way, mm-hmm. you know? Which, again, that was what I was totally bummed out. I really wanted a continuation. Which is what they should do with the new ones.
But you couldn't, because then it would be like, what would be the continuation?
I know.
But Twilight
that's,
Princess.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Is the continuation is...
There is no continuation, because
he's dead.
You have to wait a little bit.
Yeah.
You have to wait some timelines.
Another Link
comes
around. Yeah.
Yeah. So, that's accepted by as fact by a lot of the community, which you're... theory that you're going to talk about is also accepted as fact.
Yeah, it's accepted as fact by a lot of people, and it's totally hated by other people.
Yeah, it's one or the other.
Yeah, it's two extremes, and I guess that's all theories, really. But I touched on it, the last both episodes we've done. I'm glad we're doing a theories thing, because I can shut up about it now.
Yeah.
And that's, in Mass Effect, the indoctrination theory. Now this is actually one of the few that I started developing on my own, and then when I read all about it after I was done playing, I was like, oh my god.
Yeah.
I watched 3 hours, literally 3 hours worth of YouTube videos.
And still watching
just how all these tiny little things add up, and it's amazing. They connect so well. Granted, there is some leaps on a couple of them, but so many of them just oh, man. I mean, it was at least... I'll get into that at the end. I'll tell where I stand on it, really, at the end, and what I think actually happened with BioWare. So, Mass Effect. At the end of the entire Mass Effect trilogy... you have the Reapers, the big bad guys consuming all of advanced organic life in the entire galaxy.
Right.
What they do is they come in and they just obliterate everything. And the whole purpose of all three games so far is slowing them down, stopping them as best you can. So at the end here, they come, they're here, they're destroying everything. They're taking over Earth. And Earth, welcome to Earth. they've taken over Earth, and now you're kind of screwed. You're desperately trying to find a way to take them down. Now, this whole trilogy has been you looking at ancient technology, the Protheans that came before. They were the part of the last cycle that got obliterated, and any information you can get from this ancient race helps you try to fight the Reapers. You also look at Reaper technology to try and help fight the Reapers. Now, at the end, you have your huge Navy fleet come in the best battle sequence ever to attack the Reapers at Earth. You fight your way through, you land, and you start fighting all the ground forces. You're trying to work your way to basically this huge beam of light that's going to take you up to... the Citadel, which is a huge space station that's been moved over to Earth so that they can protect it, because it's a key piece in their own destruction. So they have to keep it close, you know. And that's simplifying everything, but...
Yeah.
So you're trying to get to that point so you can get on board the ship. That's where you can, basically do something. We're not exactly sure how this weapon you've been developing the entire game is going to help, but you know you have to get on board the Citadel to make it work. So you're trying to get there, and you fight past all these crazy, you know, dudes, all these creeper ground forces, and you're charging down a hill towards this beam of light so you can get on. And
you, then you fight the boss of the game, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Marauder Shields.
Marauder Shields. but the big Reaper comes, lands in front of you, and starts obliterating the entire, your all your forces. And here's you, one dude, on your feet, just running, trying, or dudette, trying to get to this beam of light. And it looks at you, and it just shoots its beam, and it just kind of cuts, and you don't know what's happening.
Big white flash.
Big white flash. And then you wake up, you're alone, it, like, flies off for some reason, but you're awake, and you stumble aboard the ship, you beam up there, you're left with this choice, basically, at the end, do you destroy the Reapers, but that would also destroy all artificial life, some of your companions are AIs, so it would destroy them too, and you would probably die, since you were reconstructed in the second one, basically, using a lot of, like, computer technology and advanced, you know, technology to make
and
yourself
you're, like,
alive again.
In space. On
yeah,
the Citadel.
And you're in space on a space station, so...
With a lot of AI.
It seems like you
yeah.
die if you choose yeah. this, but the Reapers die too. But Reaper technology goes down too, so all of the Mass Effect relays, everything all the technology has been based on to allow space travel is basically going to go down. Then there is, you can control the Reapers. And you could use your consciousness to, like, combine with the Reapers so that you can start controlling them. And then you can, like, make a better future. You can change their programming so they don't destroy everything. And then if you get a certain amount of points, there's synthesis, which is combining both AI and biological DNA into, like, a new form of life or something.
Yeah.
So that's your three choices.
So, yeah, there's destroy, control, synthesis.
Destroy, control, synthesis. You choose one. There's different endings, different consequences for those endings. I know everyone says it's all the same ending, but it's really not. If you really think about the consequences, even at face value, they're very different. Now, the theory is all of that is actually in your mind. And the whole thing with the Reapers is they indoctrinate their followers so that they don't have any choice. They're, like, controlled by the Reapers to do what they want. So everyone who has encountered Reaper technology, every single person, the whole first game is based off of a rogue agent that's been indoctrinated by the Reapers to do their will, to bring them back.
Right.
So anyone who's encountered any technology from them has begun to be indoctrinated. The only person is you, the player, Shepard.
Which you have encountered a ton.
A ton. You've literally been
the game,
on board.
The first game starts off with you touching a Prothean beam.
Yeah.
And then the end of the, yeah, and then you are on board a ship for
you're
a
in
long
the vicinity
time.
Of that Reaper ship that whole time, too.
Yeah.
And the second one, you're on board, like, Reaper technology. In the first one, in some of the, like, exploration part of it, you can find Reaper technology. And it's, like, converted entire colonies to go crazy right. and stuff.
Right, because
so,
even in the first one, when you go to that planet and you get on and you meet a Harbinger.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Which is a Reaper.
Yeah.
That secretary that's there, she's indoctrinated because in the other, like, sort of lore and, you know, some of the things you find that you can read, like, she, if you choose to save her or let her go.
Yeah.
Or whatever, she goes through sort of, like, seeing psychiatric doctors, and it turns out she's indoctrinated.
She's indoctrinated.
And,
just
yeah.
from being in the vicinity of
yeah.
this thing. So, the whole point being, anyone near a Reaper is being indoctrinated slowly. And it's not immediate. It's so there's like something at the back of your brain just kind of growing. Just your thoughts start changing. You start thinking that maybe it's not such a bad thing for them to come back, and there's some kind of plan overall for them, and everything's going to be okay. Maybe we can live side by side. Saren, the bad guy from the first one, even says they're going to usher in a new era of, like, technology and biology. So, like, DNA plus AI combined, which is synthesis.
Yeah, because the first game, that's what Saren wants you to do.
That's what he wants you to do.
Like, join us.
Basically,
you know,
synthesis.
We can be, yeah.
Yeah, we'll be coincide.
Join me,
great.
We can rule the galaxy.
Pretty much. And you, as not being indoctrinated yet, can see how insane that is, because Reapers have only destroyed everything in their path, and they completely obliterated every other, like, advanced life form that's ever come about. They leave just enough primitive life forms out there to grow again, so they can come back and do it every, like, 50,000 years or whatever it is.
Right.
So, you, throughout the game, the theory is, little by little, you're actually being indoctrinated. And you can't see it as the player, because you're being indoctrinated. That's
right.
The whole point. So especially by the third one, the theory starts at the very beginning. You're fighting your way through Earth to try and escape, because the Reapers are attacking. You see this little kid, like, playing with his ships outside, and you're like, oh, you know, humanity, ah.
Yeah.
Then the Reapers attack, and you actually see that kid...
get lit.
Go into a building. As soon as he enters that building, a Reaper, like, beam hits it and blows it up.
No, it's... He goes into a building, you follow him. He goes into this vent.
No. This is before that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If you pay attention, like, you're walking along, like, one of the skyscrapers, and in the distance, you see the building you eventually go to. You can actually see that kid walk into that building. Like, you can see him go into that door. It shuts behind him, locks... Then a beam hits, it blows up the building completely. Like, it just destroys it. Like, that's the building you're eventually going to go into, and it's wrecked. So, you see him go in, and like, oh my god. So, that's where he actually... The theory is that's where the kid actually dies.
Okay.
So, you run down there, and you're trying to escape. It's totally easy to miss that, by the way.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, if you watch, you can actually see him run in.
You have watched a lot of videos on this.
I have. but he's in there. He's in one of the vents. You find the kid, and you're like, come on, we got to get out of here. I got to save you. And Anderson, your, like, commander, is there with you. And he's like, we got to go, dude. Like,
what are you doing? Yeah.
He doesn't see the kid at all. He doesn't acknowledge the kid there at all. And when Shepard tries to, like, crawl in and grab him, it's too hot because the, like, blast heated everything. So he's like, he, like, reacts to it. And then, like, Anderson says something, and he looks back, and the kid's gone. So he's like, what? How's the kid sitting in there if it's so hot?
Yeah.
So then they keep going. And they fight through. You finally get on a shuttle to get out of there. And you see people getting on board these other shuttles trying to escape. And here comes the kid. Oh, he made it. So he's running up. But as he's, like, running up.
Trying to get on a
trying
shuttle.
Trying to get on. There's,
no
like,
one acknowledges.
Adults. Yeah, there's adults. Right there, like, trying to help... They're helping other people on board, and he's, like, struggling to get in. No one acknowledges him. At all. Nobody. And Shepard's just watching him struggle, because he's on his own shuttle over in the distance. And they take off. And then those other shuttlecrafts take off, too. But here comes a Reaper around the corner, and totally blows up those shuttles.
Yeah.
So, that kid's dead, you know.
That kid's dead twice.
Twice.
Poor kid.
And throughout the... rest of the game, you have these dreams that you see the kid, you're chasing after the kid, and he's basically wants your help. You can never catch up to him, and he, like, keeps catching on fire. And you're like, whoa, what's going on? Going back to the first game, there's a race that's indoctrinated.
Rachni?
The Rachni. Arachni, or whatever, however you pronounce
this
it.
This is probably the part that, like, gets me the most.
This one's, like, the best part of the theory, for sure. They actually talk about the Reapers coming in and indoctrinating them. They're a really aggressive race, and there was a whole Arachni war, like, before the games ever started. It's all part of the backstory. And they're a really aggressive race, really hard to defeat, and a huge war that starts a chain of events that leads to other things in the game, like the Genophage and everything. And basically they say you're actually able to communicate with one of these Rachni, and it says, we weren't always like this. And they communicate kind of with song. It's almost like whales, like insect whales.
Yeah.
They communicate with song, and they started hearing, like, a discord in their songs. Like, it started, like, just kind of not being something that was there before, and it started driving them crazy. So it was actually, as you find out, the Reapers that were kind of trying to indoctrinate them to cull and destroy any, like, resistance that would have been there. It was just enough to, like, cause this huge war to kind of get everyone weakened, so that they can come back and have easy peasy, you know, no problems. And it actually describes what it's like to be indoctrinated. And it starts talking about how the song, it was just trying to communicate with you with words it doesn't really know. And it's like oily
whispers.
Like it was like
shadowy, oily whispers.
Shadowy, oily, like whispers, like in your mind, you know? As
very specific
imagery.
Terminology, yeah.
So in these dreams in the third game, you're going through this forest and you hear whispers all around you. And the only, like, figures in it, besides the boy, that's really obvious, there's figures that look kind of like people, but they're shadowy and, like, oily. Like, honest to God, it's like an oil painting. Like, kind of always in motion as you're hearing all these whispers.
As you're, like, running through this oily forest.
Yeah, so it's very specific, like, imagery that links exactly how it was described to be indoctrinated. So the theory is, you're being indoctrinated, and these dreams are a part of your mind trying to resist it, trying to decipher what's going on. In the last dream, you actually see yourself catching up to the boy, and you're with the boy smiling, and as you grab the boy like to save him and you're happy you grabbed him, you're seeing this happen, both of you like catch fire.
Yeah.
So the theory is, it's your mind trying to tell you, like, if you like
keep going
down this path, if you try to like use this imagery of the boy that represents like humanity's destruction, if you like care about that only, you will destroy yourself because you will be indoctrinated. So when you get to the end, as you're running down this hill to try to get to this, you know, giant beam to get on board the Citadel, you get hit, and it's like the very last attempt of the Reapers to like just, okay, this is the best chance we got to indoctrinate this guy. Because they could just kill Shepard, but if they indoctrinate him, they can change the entire course of the battle. You know, if they get him on their side, that means all of humanity, the strongest force at this time, will start following him, doing what he wants. He gets indoctrinated, it's just going to be a trickle effect, and they can end this battle. If they just kill him, they're still going to have to fight all of the rest of humanity's forces. Somebody else might get inside. So if they get if Shepard's head, they can have somebody on the inside. The leader, basically. So it's all this imagery. He gets on board the Citadel, and the like piles of bodies around them are both the two characters you have to choose who lives and dies in the first one. It's both their bodies like piled up around you, basically.
Yeah.
So it's like his regret about that decision based on, you know, whatever decision you made at that time.
There's like trees.
And there's trees that are similar to the ones in the dream that weren't there when he runs down. So there's like these little differences that weren't there before he actually gets hit by the beam. He gets on board the station, and then he sees what's his name? The Illuminated Man? What is this?
Oh. The Elusive Man?
The Elusive Man.
The Illuminated Man.
Now, the Elusive Man is a leader of, like, a humanity's terrorist humanity organization. Humanity rules. He's basically pro-human only. He wants to save humanity. He's representing the control side of the theory. He wants to control the Reapers so that he can make humanity stronger, use the Reaper technology for them.
Make humanity great again.
Yeah, exactly. And so he sees the Elusive Man, and he's, like, messed up. And then Anderson comes in, your commander, to try and talk to him. And Anderson, the theory is, Anderson is in your head, and so is the Elusive Man. They're actually your conscious battling it out. Of, like, no, destroy. You have to destroy. No, we have to control. And those are the two original choices. We have to control. We have to destroy. So they're battling it out. And Anderson keeps looking directly at your character whenever he's talking to the Elusive Man about how you need to, like, wake up. He's literally telling you, like, you need to wake up and see what's going on. Right. And it sounds like he's talking to the Lucid Man saying, like, you're crazy. But he's actually looking right at you if you were, like, paying attention to the dialogue. He's looking right at you saying, you need to wake up. So it's telling you, this is a dream, this is a dream the whole time. Now, the Lucid Man, based on the choices you can make, you can actually have the Lucid Man shoot Anderson, as it seems like the control theory of your mind is taking control. And he shoots Anderson right, like, where your wound is from being hit with the beam. So he gets shot in the side, and then you start bleeding, like, even more. So it's like your mind breaking down even more.
Right.
And when you get out to make your choice, the one trying to influence your choice is in the image of this kid.
The Star Child.
That it's like, well, wait a minute.
Why is it this?
Why is it the kid? And your mind is just, you're exhausted by this point. So you actually don't get to ask a lot of questions like you usually do. Usually the dialogue wheel, you can ask all kinds of different questions. You don't get to actually ask a whole lot. But the kid definitely wants you to choose either control or synthesis. Always, the only one he puts into negative light is the destruction. It makes it sound like you're a monster if you choose destruction.
And even the way that it's presented. So, the whole conversation system, the way it has worked in Mass Effect, is Paragon versus Renegade. And Paragon is usually, like, the good guy sort of choice. Like, if you want to be, you know, good and not, like, go crazy, just kill everybody sort of thing. That has been represented by the color blue. And the Renegade choice, which is, like, you don't give a shit about anybody else. Usually the choices of, like, humanity over everyone else have been Renegade choices. That's represented by red. And when you are presented with the... finally presented with the choice of which one you're going to pick after this conversation, the control option is blue, and the destroy option is red, and the synthesis option is green. But
and the whole time, this whole trilogy, the entire point is destroy the Reapers. That's been the good choice. That's been, you need to do this. Like, ultimately, that's your goal. And now, at the very, very, very end, it's like, oh, destroy's not so good.
Yeah.
And, again, going back to the dream, don't follow this kid. Because if you let your emotions run your decision-making because of what this kid represents, he's going to lead you down this horrible path. So...
and if the Reapers are in your head, they know that this kid is sort of this big sort of deal for you.
They know your emotions, they know where to play. So... essentially, there's a gajillion other things that support this theory, like back in the code that's in the game, people have looked at, like
codex entries.
The name of the kid in, like, one of the manuals for the first kid is, like, Dream Child or something, so it's like, whoa. And the foliage that the last planet that the Normandy lands on is actually called Dream Foliage, so it's like, is he dreaming those? But that those don't matter for this conversation. You can look those up. Plenty of theories on indoctrination theory. I'm also assuming you have played Mass Effect to understand what it talks.
Okay. Or Michael has. Damn it.
Gotta cut it
cut
out.
Cut that out.
So,
yeah.
Basically, you get to the
it's
end.
It's one of his favorite games.
You get to the end, and you're supposed to choose between these three choices. If you choose control or synthesis... it's impossible to have the ending cutscene where you actually take another breath. So all this crazy stuff happens. When you choose any of those choices, the Citadel basically blows up.
And you're assumed dead.
And all the Mass Effect relays, no matter what choice you make, interestingly enough, all the Mass relays blow up. So you can't do, like, hyperspace travel, basically.
Yeah.
The Reapers either... destroy, or they become under your control based on your actions, and all this crazy stuff starts happening, no matter what you choose. But it's impossible to get the ending cutscene of you taking another breath and, like, oh my god, you're
in
alive.
In all this rubble. Yeah.
In all this rubble.
Which is concrete, not...
yeah. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
If you don't choose destroy. So if you choose destroy...
one, if you choose destroy, as you're going up to it, shooting it, you're like very weak and you're shooting it, but as you get closer and shoot it more, you like stand up straighter and you look badass.
Yeah. So each choice you make, the other two choices to control and synthesis, the Star Child like doesn't disappear. He like sees you take those choices, even smiles a little bit when you make those choices, and he doesn't disappear. When you hit the destroy option, he like frowns and like disappear, like it's like this, like like
he evaporates.
And so it's him exiting your mind because you're destroying the Reaper's hold over you. At the end, you wake up in concrete with like a, you can see like one of the Mako Jeeps in the background.
And there's like rhubarb.
Yeah, it's definitely not on the Citadel. It's where like,
and even one of the developers in a interview said like, oh yeah, breath ending, wakes up under concrete. Like, he, like, straight says, like, it's
so
concrete.
It's, so it's definitely not the Citadel, where there's no concrete at all.
Yeah, because space station's moving.
Yeah, so you've been fighting through these concrete buildings this whole time. So you wake up, maybe you were wandering around or something.
Maybe you were blasted by a beam. And,
yeah, and, like, shot back or something.
Yeah.
But you basically wake up, and so the whole game series becomes actually about fighting for your mind. Like, when you wake up, it's assumed, like, you're going to continue the fight against the Reapers. You actually don't really know what happens. It's assumed you win, because then you can see, like, the at the very, very end, like, the next generation
talking about
you and how you're a legend and stuff. So
straight legend.
Straight legend, though. So that's at the very, very end. So it's assumed, like, you beat the Reapers and you bring about a new like, generation of life that doesn't have to worry about the Reapers anymore. And actually, at the end, at the two people talking at the end, it's like this little, like, granddaughter and grandpa. She's like, can I explore our space? And he's like, not yet. So it's like, maybe the Master Effect relays are still destroyed, you know? Maybe that actually did happen as a consequence of him making that choice, but he saves everybody at the same time.
Right.
So I really love the theory because it reuses so much imagery from the whole series. And what I think at the end, I believe in the indoctrination theory 100%. What I think really happened, though, is BioWare like had to hurry up. And there's actually like plans for a boss battle at the end with the Elusive Man. So I'm thinking at some point in the game, you're supposed to wake up and actually have this boss battle and then end the game. But they, like, had to hurry up. And never could make it right, so they didn't want to do it wrong. Instead, they left this very open-ended ending, where it's like, you could take it at face value, but there's all this, like, evidence that there's something more going on, but we haven't answered that.
Which, looking at other BioWare games, is a theme, too.
Yeah.
Because, like, Inquisition is also very open-ended, sort of.
Yeah. I mean, with the DLC and stuff, you get other things answered, but at the end, there's still all kinds of different things that can happen with your Inquisition and with Solas and what's really going on, and oh my god.
Yeah.
So,
which is another good theories, but don't have time for that.
Yeah. We'll have to.
So, before you knew about the indoctrination theory and all that stuff, what choice did you make at the end of the game?
You can only have one chance to make the right choice. And I was suspicious. I'm like, what the hell is going on? Like, I feel like this is a dream. Like, I even thought, like, I feel like this is a dream. Like, this doesn't add up.
Yeah.
And I, the hero I am, made the synthesis choice. Like a puss.
Because so, when I first beat it, I made the correct choice. Without knowing. And did the destroy. Because my, like,
character.
You know, my character. Well, my
the true shepherd.
Right. Well, my way of thinking was like, oh, fuck you. Like, I've been working so goddamn hard to kill these people. Like, I'm going to kill them. Like, I will play it again. Like, I will, like, load a save if this was the quote-unquote wrong choice. But right now, I'm, like, gonna destroy these assholes because I've been fighting three goddamn games to do it. And guess what? It was the right choice. And I got the breath ending because I had done all the, you know, I made sure to complete all the side missions and all that stuff.
You got the shepherd.
So when I saw that, I was like, oh, hell yeah. I must have made the right choice.
So,
and then I looked up, because you were like, oh, dude, there's a sweet theory out there. Like, I'm not even going to tell you the name of it. you got to beat the game before you look it up.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay. So I beat it. And then I was like, okay, what's the theory? And you told me about it. And then you're like, what choice did you make? I was like, destroy. And you're like, God damn it.
Yeah. So what's really cool about the game is Shepard is not getting indoctrinated. You, the player, are.
And that is insane to me.
It's like breaking fourth
wall. That BioWare would be that smart. BioWare is the best.
I love
BioWare. Blizzard is not the best. BioWare is the best. I'm going to make Michael really angry by saying that.
But yeah, so I'm indoctrinated. There's no way to
You're indoctrinated.
I've played the game again.
And I'm
had a lot of fun playing it. Made the destruction choice at the end. But you can never go back on your first choice.
And I'm the hero.
Hopefully I'll make better
decisions. I'm the hero of time.
Maybe I'll make better decisions with Andromeda.
Dude, I am so excited. Like, we were talking about hype last episode, but, dude, the hype is real. I'm so excited for that game.
For Andromeda?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
It's going to be lit.
I know.
It's going to be lit.
And, again, they aren't addressing what happens at the end, because my theory is you go in the middle of all the craziness as plan B for humanity.
Yeah. And maybe you find out at the end of that game.
I don't think so. I don't think they'll ever address it.
I don't think so. Because I hope they don't, honestly.
You go to the new galaxy thinking, like, everyone
died. Everything's fucked and we're the last hope.
You have to, like, believe that you're the last hope for humanity.
Yeah.
And
so, yeah, they're not going to address
it. They're never going to address
it. Because then it would sort of ruin that
feeling
of, like, oh, I'm not really the last
hope.
Someone
was even saying, like, Shepard choosing destroy would have destroyed whatever, like, catapult they used to launch them into the other galaxy. Like, they use Reaper technology to do it. And when Shepard makes that choice, it blows it up. So, or my theory is they blow it up on purpose because if the Reapers find out, they'll just travel across the galaxy too. So they have to make it a one-way trip or else it defeats the purpose.
And they have to send them off, obviously, beforehand.
Yeah, in case...
And because one of the trailers, Shepard's... It's
talking.
It's Jane Shepard,
yeah.
FemShep, speaking in a recording, like, you are the sort of last mission for...
Yeah. So maybe it's like Shepard's pet project we didn't even know about the first
time. Which
Although,
would be...
Again...
But you would be making that decision as the character.
Again, I wouldn't think they would tell Shepard, since they knew he was going to be on... Or she was going to be on the first... On the front lines. If they get indoctrinated, do the Reapers know your memory? Is it like...
Maybe they just got little clips of other things you said, sort of like the, this is my favorite shop in the Citadel. They just kind of got in a bunch of recordings and just sort of made this server. We'll find out, I'm sure. The beginning of the game is...
The first 15 minutes.
Is going to be you being sent off, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I really like how Mass Effect started with the first one. Of, like, them deciding to initiate you in the Spectre program because you're so strong-willed. So that's why you've sort of, like, been able to resist this long.
Exactly.
And the Reapers know that as well. And so you're sort of the, you know, you're the Mockingjay, if you want to put it in Hunger Games terms. You're, like, the symbol of this resistance. So if they can get you...
They can get everyone.
Then they'll win.
Yeah.
Great theory. My favorite... One of my favorite video game series. One of my favorite stories.
Yeah, it's the best.
That'll do it for this episode. This is a little longer episode, but that's okay. It was good. And there's many... We might sort of do this sort of theory thing periodically. Because new theories will come up, especially when shows come back and stuff like that.
And like you said, we could do a whole thing on Lord of the Rings. We could do... We'd never touched on Dragon Age before. Like, I have all kinds of theories on that, too. I haven't thought about it in a while. I'll have to go back and play those, too.
Yeah, and there's more Game of Thrones theories. There's more. There's a bunch of other things we didn't talk about that we could definitely talk about. So we'll do this periodically, especially as other games come out that are really good. And, you know, we can talk about older games and stuff, too. But
Next week, whatever topic we... decide to talk about, we'll add if we lost or won this week in fantasy football.
Right, so this, you know, this Thursday, the NFL starts, so in addition to what we're drinking and what we've been playing and watching, we'll also talk whether we won or lost in fantasy.
Who's busted, who's injured.
Yeah, we'll talk sort of just a little
bit. Just a little.
Because yeah. that is also a very geeky and
nerdy yeah, absolutely.
Thing that, who fantasy like when you think about fantasy football, it's so stupid. Yeah. It's so nerdy and like dumb. But people get so it's fun.
It's good.
So yeah, we'll talk about that. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at the Brothers Geek Pod. And also we should talk or email us also questions at brothersgeek@yahoo.com. Thebrothersgeek@yahoo.com. If you have any questions or whatever,
you can still be our first email.
We can first be our first email.
There wasn't any emails, right?
No.
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 So you can still be our first email. We'll read your questions. You can bitch about our theories and tell us how we're wrong.
Yeah, maybe email us some of your favorite theories.
Yeah, seriously.
We can talk about that. And we also want to talk about that me and Chris are going to start, if you noticed last week's episode, the intro music was the menu theme from one of our favorite, maybe not our favorite, but it is a very nostalgic
oh, yeah.
game for us, Legend of the Dragoon, one of the first RPGs, really, we've ever played. And we want to do a drunken playthrough of that. We want to play a drinking game, and we're going to record it, and we're going to make a YouTube channel and put it up on that YouTube channel, so stay tuned for that. We're going to call it Legend of the Drunkoon, and it's going to be great.
Yeah.
And we're going to do that sometime this week, record the first session of it.
And
so
it's just going to be fun.
It's going to be a great time. That game is so Japanese. it's awesome. If you don't know what Legend of the Dragoon is...
You will.
You will know. It's great. All I got to say is, Gust of Wind Dance! And as soon as we play it, you'll know what
you'll
that means.
You'll know what we're talking about.
You'll know what that means. But it actually is the whole edition system in that game. And we'll talk about it. It's cool.
Yeah.
It's a cool way of doing stuff. So yeah, that concludes episode 3 this week. Thank you all for listening to this little longer episode. You know, this Southern California traffic, if you're sitting in it, maybe a longer episode is better. You know, because traffic sucks.
Yeah.
So yeah, thank you all. Come back next time, and where we talk about whatever the hell we're going to talk about that episode. It's going to be great. So yeah, this is Patrick signing off.
And Chris.
See you next time. Bye!